Welcome back to the Talk of the Century with Ashley, Jana, Prachi, and Fatima. We are feeling a little nostalgic, so today's episode we'll be recapping the Roaring Twenties. The 1920s has brought in so many changes when it comes to fashion. Women of younger generations became flappers and wore functional, flattened bust lines rather than accentuating it, with a straight line chemise topped by the close-fitting clash hat, with a bob or shortcut hair to fit under the popular hats, and low-waisted dresses with fullness at the hemline. Remember back in 1925 when women wore shift-type dresses with no waistline? Well, as we approach the end of the decade, dresses have straight bodices and collars, tucks at the bottom of the bodices are popular, as well as knife-pleated skirts with a hem approximately 1 inch below the knee. Looking back, undergarments began to transform after the Great War to conform to the ideals of a flatter chest and more boyish figure, and the confining corsets were discarded, replaced by a chemise or camisole and bloomers, later shortened to panties or knickers. During the mid-1920s, all-in-one lingerie became popular, and women's legs were seen with hemlines rising to the knee, and dresses becoming more fitted and a more masculine look became popular, including flattened breasts and hips, short hairstyles such as the bob cut, Eton crop, and the Marcel wave. Here's a fun fact. One of the first women to wear trousers, cut her hair, and reject the corset was Coco Chanel. She was probably the most influential woman in fashion in the 20th century because women in the 1920s always had specific times to wear specific clothes. Men's fashion throughout the decade saw men abandoning their highly formal clothing for more comfy athletic clothing. Men wore short suit jackets, the old long jackets being used merely for formal occasions. Fashion for them was characterized by extremely high-waisted jackets, often wore belts and lapels on suit jackets, and were not very wide as they tended to be buttoned up high. Here's another fun fact. The style of jacket had been greatly influenced by the uniforms worn by the military during the First World War. Trousers were relatively narrow and straight, and they were worn rather short so that a man's sock often showed. Trousers also began to be worn cuffed at the bottom at this time. By 1925, wider trousers, commonly known as Oxford bags, came into fashion, while suit jackets returned to a normal waist and lapels became wider, and were often worn peaked and loose-fitting sleeves without a taper also began to be worn during this period. During the late 1920s, men wore double-breasted vests, often worn with a single-breasted jacket. Men also had a variety of sport clothes available to them, including sweaters. Trousers were commonly known as knickers. For formal occasions in the daytime, a morning suit was usually worn, and for evening wear, men preferred the short tuxedo to the tailcoat. Men usually leaned towards short jackets with two or three buttons, rather than jackets with long tailcoats as well as pinstripe suits. For casual wear, men often included knickers, short pants that came to the knee, for occasions at the theater, small dinner parties, entertainment in the home, and dining in a restaurant, tuxedos were appropriate. For men's hat, they usually wore depending on their class, with upper-class citizens usually wearing top hats or a Homburg hat, middle-class men wore either a fedora, bowler hat, or a Tribbley hat. During the summer months, a straw border were popular for upper-class and middle-class men. Working-class men wore a standard newsboy cap or a flat cap.
Scott Fitzgerald, I'm sure you've heard of him, has been one of the most popular writers of this decade. It was in 1925 when he published The Great Gatsby, his most popular novel. Another tremendously popular writer of the day was Ernest Hemingway. Hemingway, like many of our brothers, husbands, and sons, had witnessed the horrors of World War I firsthand, and his short stories were written in a simplified minimalist style. Among Hemingway's most popular works are The Sun Also Rises, A Farewell to Arms, and For Whom the Bell Tolls. As an avid reader myself, I felt it necessary to pay tribute to these amazing writers in the past decade.
A new year is right around the corner. It's been quite cold the past few weeks, so when you ankle in the snow, be sure to layer up. Snow has been falling nonstop, which gives me the shivers because it makes me not want to go to work. My cheaters get all fogged up and my knees freeze. I hope you all have a lovely new year. Many great events happened, but also many tragedies. I would like to highlight some for you all to remember what happened this decade. 56 in Newfoundland on August 24, 1927, a hurricane swept through Atlantic Canada, washing out roads, filling basements, and swamping boats. In Newfoundland, 56 people died at sea. Also, multiple tornadoes hit southern Manitoba on June 22, 1922. Hot and humid air led to the development of several tornadoes in the area. 5 deaths and hundreds of injuries were attributed to the event, which caused $2 million loss in 1922. Many families and friends have passed, and these tragedies must be brought to attention. We will now give a moment of silence for all the loved ones that have passed. Now, on to business. Canada's war bill in 1927 was $46 million. Many interesting statements were made. Ottawa, January 31st, the Auditor General, who is the country's bookkeeper, published the annual report showing how much money the government raised and where it was spent during the year that has ended. It ranges from national debt and the details of the traveling expenses of junior officials in the civil service. They spent $222,000, more than the parliament voted for them to use. The administrations of the pension took $114,000 more than the parliament approved, and the coastal and lighthouse service cost $30,000 more. The Department of Agriculture must count for $37,000. That's a lot of money that was not approved by the government that was used. Airplanes, automobiles, movies, radios, and jazz music were all novelties in the 1920s. It was an exciting time of technological innovation. Canada introduced its first radio stations in 1922. Which was only a few years ago, so it is a big deal, and I think I should touch upon the topics of these popular items. Establishing a Canadian presence on the airwaves and an alternative to American broadcasts were popular and still popular now, too. The world's first documentary film, Nanook of the North, shot in Quebec, was a box office hit. In 1928, and almost all of you must have heard of it, meanwhile, Canada's demand for cars or Hayburners steadily increasing, expanding the automobile industry along with highway construction and related businesses. We will discuss more on these next week. Now let's talk about art. The Group of Seven are very popular nowadays. And if you don't know what the Group of Seven is, I'm going to talk about it right now. The Group of Seven are a group of artists. They were founded by Tom Tomlinson Waas, an early friend and contemporary of the group. The Group of Seven tried to capture the essence of the Canadian spirit through their abstracted landscapes, mostly of the Canadian Shield area of Northern Ontario. They wanted to move away from copying European styles and subjects and express a distinctively Canadian version. Members include Lauren Harris, Arthur Lismer, Franz Johnston, who left in 1926, J.E.H. MacDonald, Frank Carmichael, A.Y. Jackson, F.H. Varley, and A.J. Kaysen joined in 1926. Became something of national pride as the group gained international acclaim and were considered notable for their contributions to 20s society. This segment was brought to you by Band-Aid. Who hasn't used Band-Aid? Brand adhesive bandages. In a world full of cuts, scrapes, blisters, and bruises, it seems hard to imagine life without those little adhesive bandages. Blood gushing out of your finger? Use a Band-Aid. You scraped your precious knee? Try a Band-Aid. Do you want a Band-Aid? Only 3 cents a box.
Did you know that sports has improved our nation after World War I by bringing people together and having them communicate about the things they are passionate about coming out of the Great Depression? Sports that were a hit in the 1920s were hockey, football, lacrosse, and rugby. Lionel Conacher was Canada's most famous athlete of the first half century. Not only was he known for this, but he was also a multi-sport athlete who excelled at wrestling, boxing, lacrosse, hockey, baseball, and football. He sure was a ladies' man, if you ask me. Speaking about ladies' men, Percy Williams was also a significant athlete in the 1920s. He was a 20-year-old sprinter known as the fastest individual at that time period. This guy was one big of a deal as he won medals in the 100 and 200-meter sprints at the 1928 Amsterdam Olympics. Speaking of the Olympics, how could we forget about the Edmonton grads? Even though the Edmonton grads were first founded in 1912, they evolved throughout the 1920s all the way until 1940. Isn't that crazy how they had played 522 games and had only lost 20 games? Shocker, isn't it? Most importantly, sports were a great way for athletes to communicate and have fun with their other athletes. This also helped women gain their rights. As women played sports, they were able to show men that they could be treated equally and had the same capabilities men did. The 1920 Olympic Games were awarded to Antwerp to honor all the suffering he had inflicted on the Belgian people during World War I. Due to their parts of being an aggressor nation in the war, the countries Germany, Austria, Hungary, Bulgaria, and Turkey were not invited to participate. Overall, Canada had lots of benefits from sports. In 1926, Canada had their first woman speed skating world champion. Layla Brooks, also known as Queen of the Blades, won more than 65 championships from the provincial world level. Not only did she accomplish this, but she set 17 world records in all distance measured in the imperial system.
Dancing in the past 10 years has become really popular amongst many events. Some are in youth activities, dinners, holidays, and family functions. They like to participate in community dances, dance competitions, dance marathons, and in watching the dance as a form of entertainment. The well-known dance, the Charleston, emerged from colored Americans and is known to be the dance of the decade. Other popular dances include the shimmy, black bottom, bunny hop, butterfly, strut, waltz, foxtrot, tango, turkey trot, and cheek-to-cheek. Films and theaters were also very popular in the 20s. With Charlie Chaplin in silent films such as The Gold Rush, 1925, playing the tramp, actress Mary Pickford, known as America's Sweetheart, starring in movies such as Pollyanna, 1920, Little Lord Fauntleroy, 1922 and 1921, Little Annie Rooney, 1925, My Best Girl, 1927, Coquette, 1921, which was also her first talking picture, The Taming of the Shrew, 1929, her only film with Fairbanks. And popular fads such as Mahjong, brought over from China, and Ouija boards were also very popular during the 1920s. This segment is brought to you by Red Rock Cola. Babe Ruth says it's the finest cola drink I've ever tasted. Buy Red Rock Cola for only 5 cents.
And I'll be covering crime.
This decade recap will highlight news and crime that stood out over the better part of the decade. Looking back, Rocco Perry, our very own Al Capone, made for a great source for news stories and was routinely a topic of conversation at the dinner table. Let's take a look at how he's grown through the years. The early 1920s saw Rocco Perry, an Italian immigrant who came to Hamilton, as a small-time crook as he was emboldened and enriched by the smuggling trade. It was in 1924 when journalist Dave Rogers revealed Perry to the public, who, although was known to the police, had hitherto remained a mysterious figure to the public. Sometime in early November 1924, Rogers had scored an exclusive interview with Perry, the King of Bootleggers. Whether it was his elite society connections, the rumored payoffs to Hamilton police and judges, or the fact that he'd been bootlegging for 8 years without any serious legal repercussions, Perry seemed supremely confident that he was immune from the law. Indeed, the article turned him into the public face of Ontario bootlegging as a self-styled King of Bootleggers. I remember standing in line, the newsboys were mobbed, and copies of the 2-cent paper were being sold for $2. We know now that he would later come to regret the numerous incriminating comments he flagrantly made. But it was during this interview that Perry said, "My men do not carry guns. If I find that they do, I get rid of them. It is not necessary. I provide them with high-powered cars. That is enough. If they cannot run away from the police, it is their fault. But guns make trouble. My men do not use them." Well, I don't know about that. A while before he had said that, Perry and his associates were linked to the murders of the Sarconi brothers, who were the boss of the Sarconi crime family. With or without guns, people were and are getting hurt. Speaking of, Rocco Perry has been linked to the deaths of the 44 people who passed as a result of Bunkooch. Although Perry was wanted at the time when the crime scene was active, he was let go as a result of the lack of evidence proving him guilty, especially as no one would speak. Recent news has brought light to the fact that evidence indeed may exist to put Perry behind bars for these deaths. Like referenced earlier, Perry was rumored to be paying off officers and judges alike, and recent evidence shows that an officer withheld crucial evidence in return for an undisclosed sum of money. The evidence that could put Perry behind bars hasn't been released. We will come back after a message from our sponsors. The Deco System. Lower your heating costs. This system allows you to burn the smaller and less costly sizes of anthracite by means of forced drop. Hundreds of installations are giving complete satisfaction in many of Montreal and Toronto's best-known residences and commercial buildings, to the owners of which we will gladly refer to you for recommendation. Call or write to the DECO System Toronto for more information. Hello, it's Prash again with an overview of the decade. Earlier this year, London and Washington agreed that in the upcoming NAWA conference, a complete limitation on all forms of warships, including battleships, would come up. It is entirely possible that the occasion may be taken for the advancement of a suggestion made to abolish battleships. Indeed, it is an idea that may surely be found to reside in certain quarters. It is interesting to note that in the whole world, not one battleship is under construction. One of the greatest arguments advanced for the reduction of navies is the savings of taxpayers' money. Another is that if no nation has battleships, no other would need them. The conference later this year, we felt it necessary to go over the arguments made. Another thing that stood out this decade in more recent news is that full diplomatic relations have been restored between Russia and Great Britain. The decision regarding Russia capped a full day in both the House of Commons and the House of Lords. The House of Commons voted 324-199, approving of the government's motion. The vote approving the government's restoration of relations marked the first definite accomplishment of Macdonald's government. Further, not a single Dominion had expressed opposition to the policy which had been pursued. Replies from the government indicated that it was generally accepted that the renewal of relations, sooner or later, was going to happen. To recap, the diplomatic ties had been severed in 1927 and the Anglo-Russian agreement was broken at the same time. A raid by police on the London headquarters of Arcos Limited found incriminating documents and evidence of Soviet propaganda. The basis of resumption of relations with Russia was negotiated by Mr. Henderson and Mr. Dovlasky, Russian ambassador in Paris.
Great to see you again. Now you will be talking about politics. Now, you might be thinking about politics being the boring stuff. Well, fear not, because you're in for a ride. The First World War had broken down barriers for women. Coming out of war, women had finally gotten more privilege with their rights. They began to fill in jobs and also got to participate in body contact sports. The Pearson's case, which included the Alberta Five, played a significant role in this act. The Alberta Five was a group of women's activists led by Emily Murphy. During the 1920s, there was a debate amongst Canadians debating what a person was. In the eyes of the law, women were legally not considered a person. In 1927, they had challenged the government to legally consider women as a person. Speaking as a woman, the government must have been ossified to make this type of decision. Due to their courageous acts, they eventually got their demand in 1929. The Privy Council finally came to an acceptance that the word person refers to both men and women. Women finally could be appointed to the Senate. Without the Pearson's case, Canada wouldn't become the free and equal country it is today. In 1920, Manitoba's general election occurred. This was not any ordinary election. It was the first election to introduce different political parties other than the same old Conservatives and Liberals. This event had also affected citizens who contributed to the Winnipeg's general strike that occurred just the year before. Looking back at all these events reminds me of how much the 1920s was a scramble. Just to refresh your memory, the Winnipeg general strike was an outbreak of labor forces protesting against enforcing better working conditions and wages. This major tragedy caused the result of labor unrest and disputes. 2 deaths occurred, 42 wounded, and 94 arrested. Canada was very roaring economically in the 20s because of the strong economic growth and prosperity. Well done, Canada, if I say so myself. Fun fact, did you know that insulin was created in 1921? This sure was a high hat to the stomach to me. On January 11th, 1922, the treatment for diabetes was used. Scientists who studied at the University of Toronto were responsible for the discovery of insulin. The main discoverer of insulin was Sir Frederick G. Banting. Sponsor. Ladies and gentlemen, are you tired of drying your hair with the same old vacuum cleaner? Well, it looks like it's your lucky day, because I got a solution for you. The brand new Avance Beauty Locks Hair Dryer is a lifesaver. Not only is it meant for hair, but it is also portable, faster, and will give you the beautiful, luscious locks you've always wanted. This product is delicate and danky, just like you, but in return, your hair will be dry in half the time a vacuum one. Thank me later, ladies and gents.